Good morning, everyone. I'm so happy to be here with you today. Not that I'm not always, but I just love this reading from the Bible. It is one of everybody's favorites, I think. And I don't know about anybody else, but in part, I've always been a sucker for "And They All Lived Happily Ever After." And sometimes you get up here to talk about these readings and they're anything but that in the moment. But this is just such a wonderful parable that Jesus tells us. Some time ago, I don't remember when, months ago, but I was reminded of it yesterday as we had a class on really infinite joy, divine love. It was called Opening to the Heart of Hearts. And this talk that I had heard of Swamiji's through what's called Treasures Along the Path, I'm sure many of you subscribe to it, but it's available to everybody. It's been a labor of love for people to take all of Swami Kriyananda's old talks. Swami Kriyananda is the man who founded all of Ananda. And he's been speaking since Ananda was, he's been speaking since before Ananda was founded. That's a big part of what he came in to do, was really just share these wonderful teachings with all of us. But from the time Ananda was founded in the late 60s or early 70s, Swamiji has given probably just thousands of talks. And now they've all been digitized, and we can get one a month through this program called Treasures. And they are treasures. So I was listening to one that he gave probably 30 years ago. And he was so beautifully explaining what happens from the instant of inception, what happens when the sperm and the ovum come together and the medulla is formed, and how instantly we enter into a state of duality, a state where the soul becomes identified with this body and therefore has already begun to turn away from its natural home or place of oneness with God. And we've talked about this many times, but Swamiji explains it. And he goes on to talk about how he likens it to a stream that then has tributaries, and then the tributaries have tributaries. And he's talking really in that talk about how far away from the source we can get. And he spends a lot of time, it's a beautiful talk, I'm sorry, I don't remember the name of it, about what happens as we enter into these various tributaries and how they develop an energy of their own, often that can take us further away from the source. And at the moment that we decide that we want to begin practices or ways of trying to come back to remembering who we are, to come back to our divine nature, that too has a way of giving us help, of allowing us to move on this journey in a way that we simply could not on our own. His analogy of a stream is very apt, of course, because I was thinking about a swimmer. And you could take somebody who's a very strong swimmer and you could put them in a swimming pool and they would swim and they would have a certain pace. But if you put them in a stream, we know, and they swim at exactly the same pace and with the same strength, but they're going to cover more distance. They're going to get further than they ever could swimming on their own. And that stream on our spiritual path is really our spine. It's our astral spine. It's the very center of our spiritual being. And what Swamiji was saying, in essence, is that if we get help, if we jump into the stream, we can not only get to our destination faster, but we get a kind of help in our instance, from our guru, from our gurus, from our teachers. And we get to arrive at places that we simply couldn't do on our own. It would just be impossible in a lifetime, or probably in many lifetimes, because we come back in our next lifetime and we tend to forget a lot of the progress that we've made. We certainly, most of us, forget our past lives. But if we think, just pay some attention to how much effort any one of us puts into changing any quality in our life, any quality. Maybe we live with fear. Maybe we're a little jealous. Maybe we need a lot of positive feedback from people. It doesn't matter what it is. And you set out very consciously to change that in yourself, to let go of that which is holding you back. Everybody in this room knows how hard it is to do that. How many times in my life, even with one or two qualities, it's popped up again, and I've thought to myself, I can't believe I'm dealing with this again. I was sure that I had already healed myself of that problem in my life, and then there it is. So it would be very hard for us, given how much we struggle with any one thing, never mind all of the issues, all of the ways that we're being drawn away from our divine source and out into this world. How easy it is to get in that other stream, which also feeds us. We have these experiences. We're out there. We satisfy a pleasure, whatever it is, and it feels so good that we want to do it again and again. And before we know it, we're spinning really rather far away from our divine calling. Now, the very good news in all of that is that no matter how far away from our center we get, the source is still the same. We're always simply a part of the divine. That never changes. No matter how we're living our lives, no matter what those qualities are that we're struggling with, we're still exactly who we were when we... There was a sign on a friend of mine's refrigerator that I used to love that said, "May you always feel as beautiful as you were in the eyes of God when he first thought of you." And we're always that, no matter what our life is that we're living. We just have our attention focused in a different direction. In a way, it's really that simple. We could come back anytime because God never went anywhere. He's actually right inside of us. He is us. It's not that there's some long, hard voyage that we have to take or journey. We just have to change the focus of our attention. But it's challenging. But what Swamiji was talking about in that talk is as soon as we start making spiritual effort, that the guru is right there and that they take us places in a more direct route, faster than just places that we could never even imagine having gone on our own. Just recently, well, now it's 3 weeks. I guess that's a good sign for me that it still feels recently that I came back from a spiritual pilgrimage to Europe, to mostly Italy, which was really the meaningful part of this journey for me. It was nothing short of an extraordinary venture. We first went to Rome. I went with a group of Ananda devotees from around the world. We started in Rome. We went then to Florence. It was all beautiful. It was all wonderful. But for me, it was a little bit of foreplay. I was really interested in getting to Assisi. And with good reason, the instant that I arrived in Assisi, I mean the instant that I arrived at Ananda Assisi, I felt that I had been transported into another reality. From that moment on until I left Italy, I lived, as I think many people on this journey did, in some other space. I've been not quite been able to find the words for a lot of the experiences that I had. Some of them, I've said to many people, they're just not to be shared. They're too sacred. And as soon as you put a sacred experience into words and you're into your mind, it of course just diminishes the whole experience. We simply can't share those profound spiritual experiences that we have. But when I remembered that talk that Swamiji gave for the class yesterday and then read this reading, I realized that something else was going on the whole time we were in Assisi. And that is that these great saints, Swami Kriyananda himself, who left his body in Assisi, but who is so present there. He is there. It's not like he used to be there. It's not that he visited there a lot. Everybody on the trip felt it. And then St. Francis, this extraordinary Catholic saint who was just a true bhakti yogi, who lived from his heart, who loved everybody and everything, and you are there with him. Well, I just felt like, you know how you sometimes pick children up by their arms and you just take them down the sidewalk faster than their little legs could carry them? That's what was going on for many of us in Italy. And there simply is no way to describe it. It was stepping into that stream of consciousness. It was putting all of this down, whatever this is. Here I am, I have this fabulous life. I get to be a physician, I get to be a minister, I get to be here with all of you. I get to serve and love and be loved and pray and chant and do affirmations. But it's different than going on pilgrimage. And when I put all of that down and I didn't have to carry any other thoughts, there was nothing I was responsible for, the purpose of spiritual pilgrimage. And I could be there in Italy and open my heart to God, then those masters could pick me up and many others and take us on a journey and into places that we just could never have found our way. We'd be worrying about how to get from here to there, what's the road, what happened in this church. So I could say to people when I came back, I sat in the spot where Francis first received the stigmata. I stood near that stone, laid my head on it for an hour, where this man sat in front of God and said to God, I want to know all of the love and all of the pain that you have ever felt. He prayed fervently for that, and then he received the stigmata. And I could say, as I've said, I was there, but there's no way that I can describe it, because there's no way that I could explain ever to anybody what happened as I laid for an hour with my head on this glass, this beautiful piece of glass that they put over that stone, because it's nowhere that we can go by ourselves. We can't get from here to there. And our minds don't know it, because our minds have never, they can't expand like that. They're not functioning in a soul reality. They're functioning within the boundaries of the mind. And it's only when we make that decision to change the focus of our attention, to open our hearts, to let God enter, to say with all the sincerity, without any doubt, it is you that I want to be remembering. I want to know, again, what it feels like to be one with you. Then we have this beautiful parable This is the story of the soul in its eternal relationship with God. That's what this parable is about. It's about the son, the prodigal son, who left. He said to his father, I'm entitled to a certain amount of money, which he was. He was the younger son, so he got a third of the whole estate. That's what he was due. And he decided he wanted to go out into the world and find ways to have fun, be happy, find joy, feel love, all the things we're all looking to do. So he went out into the wilderness, as it's called in this story. The wilderness meaning really the world of materialism. Makes it sound a little worse than it is. It's not that horrible. We all live in that world. And he spends all of his money living what is called here the loose life. It's referred to in the Bible, whatever that means. We can use our imagination. But he spent all the money. And then it says in the reading, there was a great famine. This is a parable. The famine means that barren place we get to when we are bereft of spiritual nurturing, of being fed spiritually, of opening our hearts to God. And the story says he had to take a job to make money. He went to work for a farmer, and he was feeding the pigs, and he was so hungry that he just prayed that the farmer would offer him what he was feeding to the pigs. That's the story in the Bible. And then it came to him, a moment of realization. And he said, everyone who's working for my father is getting 3 good meals a day. They're eating bread, and I can't even eat what the pigs are eating. And he says, I'm going to go home, and I'm going to ask my father for a job. And he tells himself, he says, I've sinned against my father and against God himself. I'm hardly even worthy to have a job, but I'm going to go home to my father and ask for that. And he goes home feeling absolutely unworthy of his father's attention and energy. But his father, and he has this whole speech prepared, but his father sees him coming long before he even knows it. And what does his father do? He doesn't even just wait there till his son gets there. The Bible says his father runs to him and puts his head in his neck and embraces him. And he won't listen to a word his son is saying. He doesn't just say, it's okay, I forgive you. He's living in a consciousness of pure, eternal love. He never saw anything but God in his son. There is nothing to forgive. It just reminds me, and I told this story yesterday, of a saint in India. I don't know if this story is true or not, who was walking along the roadside, and he was beaten very badly by some thugs. And when his disciples realized that he was missing, they went out, and they found him, and they took him back. And they were just lovingly taking care of him. He was unconscious. And they had his head on one of their laps, and they were trying to put a little bit of milk into his mouth. And suddenly he opened his eyes, and he looked up, and they said, oh, you're awake. Do you know who you are and where you are? Do you know who's trying to give you milk? And he looked at them with this beautiful smile on his face, and he said, yes, the same one who was beating me some hours ago. He saw nothing but God in anyone. And that's how the Father is. There was nothing to forgive. He didn't ever see his son as doing anything wrong. And what does he do in this story? He gives him a robe. He puts sandals on his feet, because in those days, when this story was being told, this parable, it would have been disrespectful for God himself to be walking barefooted, or for people of that class. or without the proper robes. He gave him a ring, probably with the family's insignia on it, which he had probably pawned to live his loose life. But the father saw none of it. He just embraced his son. And it just, what do we do with that story? I was thinking about what happened to me when I left Italy. I came back and I said to people, it was wrenching leaving Italy for me. And it was wrenching. But the way I said it was, I felt like a little girl being torn out of her mother's arms and taken away. That's the experience I had. And when I read this story, many times I've read this story, I love this story because, like any little girl who would just love to have her daddy buying her clothes, giving her things, embracing her, loving her, who wouldn't? Who didn't? And then I said to myself yesterday, as hard as you are trying, Shanti, given the life you're living with all of your very sincere effort, look at you, you are totally anthropomorphizing this story. It's the best we can do. It's a father's love for his child. We can't even begin to fathom the love that is there for us, that is just waiting for us. It's there. All we need to do is give it the littlest bit of attention. That's why I was telling you what Swamiji said in that beautiful story that says, just turn towards the stream. It has a power of its own, and it will carry you places that you couldn't begin to go. And he says very clearly in that talk, sometimes we get confused. We think we can live in both worlds at once. We think we can just be out there and, well, I'll just step back in here and meditate just when I want to. I can live out there and then come home every once in a while. But that life too has a power. And we need to be ever mindful. One of the things that was so clear to me walking with St. Francis for those 8 days is the extraordinary likeness between Francis's teachings and our own. There is no difference. He was a bhakti yogi, and the things he taught, albeit with a kind of austerity that we don't know, I won't go back there, but back to that part of the story, I mean, but he just lived in a different time. He had to tell the story in a different way. But look what that man did. He literally changed the course of Christianity, Catholicism, the church, forever. And he did it all by loving everyone and everything, by seeing nothing but God in everything. He kissed the face that wasn't even there anymore of a leper. And because all he saw was God, that man was instantly healed in front of other people. These are not stories. These are truths. That's how he lived. And yet, interestingly, he said to his brothers in the order all the time, there is no room for softness. A little bit of softness, it's a dangerous thing. Just like Master said to Swamiji when he opened the door for one of the older monks one time, you shouldn't have done that. And Swamiji said, but she's an older woman. Master said, it doesn't matter. Only meaning we have to be serious. That's all we need to do. Put our intentions in the right place. And as soon as we do that, in our purification, every morning from 9 to 10, we sit up here. And acting as channels of these masters, the minister, the light bearers say over and over, the master says, open your heart to me. I know I've said this before up here. How can you not? It is such a beautiful line. Swamiji wrote it. It says everything. Open your heart to me, and I will enter and take charge of your life. What an extraordinary promise. This beautiful story of the prodigal son that just says, it doesn't matter where you've been or how you've been, God has not gone anywhere. God, in the form of love, of joy, of bliss, he's just right with us all the time. Saint Jean Vianney said, if you knew how much God loved you, you would die for joy. And I've heard that saying many times, but just this morning I thought, maybe he was talking about if we really knew, if we could feel God's love, then that little self in us would die in lieu of the pure joy that we could know in God's love, the pure joy that is God's love. If you knew how much God loved you, you would die for joy. And I thought to myself, oh, let me die into that joy. Let us all do it. Whatever it is we're looking for in life, we sacrifice nothing ever by turning around and just opening our hearts. Here is this beautiful father. I want to tell you one more very dear story, and then I'll end. I don't know where I read this, but a writer was writing about a story that Ernest Hemingway wrote. I don't even remember the name of the story. It's a short story. But the story was taking place in Spain, in Madrid. And the whole story isn't important, but in this, the main character in the story's name is Paco. And Paco was very rebellious, and his father became so irritated with him that he threw him out of the house with nothing. And for years, this angst lived between them. And soon the father started realizing his mistake, that he should never have thrown his son out of the house. So he searched for him, and he searched for him, but he couldn't find him. So finally, after months, he put an ad in the Madrid newspaper that said, dear Paco, I've been looking for you. I realized my mistake. Please meet me at 9 o'clock at the newspaper office tomorrow morning so that I can offer you all of my love and all of my forgiveness. And he goes to the newspaper office at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, the next morning, and Paco, being a very common name in Spain, there were 600 Pacos waiting. Isn't that just dear? It's just what we all want. We all want our mother, father, friend, beloved to just take us in their arms and let us know beyond a doubt we never have to be any further away than that. They're always that love. It's always right here for us.